Bredocast. Wir erforschen was mit Medien.
Hello and welcome to the Bredocast, the podcast of the Leibniz Institute for Media Research in Hamburg. My name is Johanna Seebauer, and today I am going to talk to a Mexican journalist and media researcher about Mexican watchdog journalism and its challenges. Her name is Veronica Sanchez. Thanks so much for coming and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Johanna, and I'm very happy to talk about it.
You started out as a journalist in Mexico. You worked at the daily newspaper for 4 years after your bachelor's degree for the newspaper Reforma. I think you will maybe also tell us a little bit about this newspaper and why it is important in the Mexican context. And then after you worked for 4 years as a journalist, you went back to studying, did your master's degree in Europe, then went back to Mexico to teach at the Universidad Panamericana, I think, in Mexico City.
Yes, that's right.
And you taught classes in practical journalism, so you investigative journalism. And then after that, you went back to study again, and now you're doing your PhD at Hamburg University. The reason why I'm talking to you today is because you just finished a talk that you gave in our institute. So you came and talked about Mexican watchdog journalism. Can you maybe explain the term watchdog journalism?
Well, watchdog journalism is a term coined in the American scholarship that has been then adopted worldwide. And it refers to this style of journalism that has its aim of holding the powerful accountable, either in government or economic actors, and also has this idea of the way you report it's going to make a change in society. And also it has a It aims in a normative perspective to be contributing to the democratic countries. So when there is this journalism watching that everything is working accordingly, that is like in favor of the public, then it is, it's a journalism that it's actually good to have.
And why is it interesting in a Mexican context? Because when you describe watchdog journalism now, I feel like from a European perspective, or maybe Western European perspective, that is what people expect from journalism in general, like holding the powerful accountable and challenge them. And what does that mean in the Latin American context?
Well, yes, I think it's relevant to address that in Mexico, as well in so many other countries that adopted a democratic model, it was a different culture of journalism in this period of times in the authoritarian regimes, or in the case of Mexico, that it was a democracy kind of system worldwide. However, in reality, it didn't work very democratically. We had elections for a period of most of the 20th century. We had presidential elections every 6 years. However, these elections were not really democratic. The president that would come next to the other would be appointed by the president in turn. So during this period, between the 1940s until the 1970s, the journalism culture in Mexico had nothing to do with the watchdog journalism role that was adopted later. For those years, journalism was much more like part of the political system that just helped the power to actually legitimize what the actions they were doing.
So it was kind of PR for the government?
It was sort of a PR. They had a relationship of convenience. That's how one of the Mexican scholars who has broadly studied Mexican journalism history coined the term, because it was a relationship of convenience, because journalists would offer loyalty to the power, and the power was going to give them economic benefits and or technological benefits for the organizations. I'm talking here about newspapers, radio, and TV channels. So basically, the culture that the general, of course, there were alternative. There has always been alternative outlets that were doing more something more critical. But in general, a journalist would assume itself as assume himself or herself as part of the system. So it was not a challenging or investigative. They were just replicating the official discourse. So that is why it's important and relevant in Mexico, because it started to emerge this sort of, well, we call it now watchdog, but at the moment people would say liberalization of the press, the change, free press, democratic press, civic press, by one of the other scholars that have studied Mexican journalism. So this concept of being vigilant of the powerful started as a general trend more into the late 70s. So that is why it's relevant. It is still, I would say, still a young term. At the moment,
And why did it start in the 70s? What changed?
Yeah, what changed? It's very, very interesting, because actually the previous years, when journalism was part of the sort of social system, nobody was really very mad about it. It was a period of growth, of stability in the country. So perhaps there was not so much need, or the society really didn't demand to have someone, you know. But I think perhaps we have to talk a little bit if we move backwards. In Mexico, we had the institutional framework that rules until today was established after the Mexican Revolution that took place between the 1910 and 1920s. So when the institutional country started to embark, journalism was seen by the powers just like another part of the system that would actually help to reconstruct the country as towards development, growth, economic growth. So because there was actually growth, stability, and many things were actually moving forward, there was nobody really requesting to have a more challenging journalism. It started to change when actually things like this system that I was telling you, that the president would appoint the next president and so on, was started to be suspicious by society. Like, more other actors of society also wanted to take part into politics, and they didn't want it anymore to just be governed by just one single party. So perhaps it was the civil society that started to be more consciousness about their rights, about their political participation. It was also like some economic crisis that took place really severe in the late 70s, and then so on and so in the 80s, in the 94. And people was really demanding to have a more active press. Perhaps another event that was very relevant for the Mexican society, at least from Mexico City civil society, was the killings of the Tlatelolco in the 3rd of October 1968. As in many parts of the world, the 68th year was very revolutionary, and in Mexico was not the exception. There were student protests demanding more autonomy of the university and civil rights and more participation. And because these protests started to develop just before Mexico was going to host for the first time Olympic Games, the president at the moment was not happy to have those riots and those students in the streets. So on one big protest on the 3rd of October, there was a massive shooting from military members, and the press was showed that it was not reporting actually the truth. So there was one correspondent from The Guardian that was sent there before to actually, you know, he was sent to kind of report the political context in Mexico before the Olympic Games. He was there more into the Olympics game, but this happened. And he reported that actually there were around 300 people killed. And the official discourse just really accounted about 30. So when civil society was saying in the newspaper that the reality was not reflected, was also another thing that actually started to demand a more the need of a press that was more into the service of the citizens instead of the power.
And how did the information about these killings, like the Guardian wrote about it. How did that information enter Mexico? Did people read the Guardian back then in Mexico?
No,
or how?
No, it was it was just like a report that was sent from here, but it was just published by those times, of course, just only in the in England, right? So Mexico didn't have any media that could actually be reflecting.
So no Mexican media actually wrote the
reality,
real numbers.
There were some descriptions, and of course, some journalists that were working at one newspaper called Excelsior. They were sort of people that were more conscious about it, but they couldn't challenge the official discourse. We have to say here that the newspapers and the journalists were basically depending economically on the government. The government was giving them a lot of advertising contracts, and journalists themselves would receive a sort of compensation of their salary by the government, besides their salary on the institution they worked. So it was also very hard to challenge the system. There were some journalists that were challenging at the time, but one case especially was killed. So it was hard to actually be alternative.
He was killed because?
Because of the, some investigations he was doing. But so that's why the general trend was not really to be, you know, challenging or going more than that.
So that was from the 30s to the 70s, you said?
To the 70s, yes.
Where the Mexican media was very closely tied to the government, but not because they were state-run media. They were private companies, right? But they were just economically very, very tightly tied to each other, right?
Exactly, economically. And the government also had good relationships, friendly relationships with the owners of the media. So it was more like a cordial kind of relationship.
And then this shooting happened in 68, where the military shot protesters, and there were massive differences in what Mexican media and foreign media reported about these protests. And that's when the Mexican public said, okay, something's wrong.
Yeah, there were many factors, of course, but this one, we can say that was kind of emblematic, that the thing was not right. So there were also, as I'm saying, economic crisis that people were also willing to know what was going on. There was also more people willing to participate more in politics. So they needed, you know, to be reflected in the media. So it there were many factors, but perhaps the Tlatelolco massacres is a nice example of a precedent that came then to change the way the journalism was conceived.
And what was the political situation? Like you said, it was a one party, like technically a one party system, although not officially, but there was always the same party ruling?
Yes.
The pre-party?
The pre-party revolutionary.
And where were they politically, on a political spectrum?
They were sort of, it's funny to where to place them, because they were really in charge to really foster the development of the country after the dictatorial period we had. So
that ended in the
1920s. And when the pre-party was there, they were, people would put it more into the sometimes leftists, because they're really willing to take the country forward, and they were very much into to develop the country, because one of the reasons of the revolution in Mexico was that the power was very much concentrated into this dictator, Porfirio Díaz. So actually the pre-party was much more protectionist, we would say. It was very state kind of. They really invested much in the industry, in the economy, very much into the into the nationalist, very national state, we would say. There was a lot of investment in the electricity sector all the big motors of the economy were state owned. And this is it. It was a growth, good growth for the economy, very protectionist. But things also started to change when the liberalization in general of the world started to take place, like the free market idea. So the government or the pre-party was also pushed to step back and start to lose power over the control of the politics and the economy of the country. So this is how was more or less the context. So between the 1970s until the 2000s, Mexico experienced a process of political liberalization, while at the same time was a process of media liberalization. This is the period where various outlets emerge with a more with a different concept of what was the role of the press.
What kind of media did arise during that time?
Well, there was one magazine that still is run today. It's called Proceso, which is a weekly magazine and with very much focus into investigative reporting, long pieces. And there was also another newspaper called Uno Más Uno, which was tabloid format, small. But after that, some people that were working there, they were not very happy with the managing that was taking place. So they left and they founded La Jornada, which is a newspaper that has always reflected the lives or the needs perhaps of the working class. And also this paper, it's interesting because it's the only one in Mexico that it's not built with like a company. It's more like a cooperative. So there is like a group of partners that own, it's like the workers of the newspaper. Everyone has their share on the newspaper. It's the only one that is run like that. The majority of the newspapers in Mexico are family business. And then the other one that emerged, La Jornada was in 1984. Then it was 10 years later, Reforma, which is this newspaper that you were introducing, that I worked there, which was one of the newspapers that really make a change on the culture of how journalism was performed in Mexico. It is owned by a family in Monterrey, a very rich and state in Mexico, and they already had a newspaper called El Norte and was very much influenced by the way journalism was done in the United States. And the owner went to Texas, to University of Austin, Texas, and he had a traineeship with one famous professor there about journalism, and this is where he adopted of this idea about the American sort of kind of journalism to be more like holding the power accountable. And they actually created a sort of traineeship for journalists. And
Reforma.
In Reforma. Mm-hmm. And they started to hire just journalists that were totally young and new and fresh from university. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't carry all the vicious that the journalists had because of the previous area. So they wanted really to train journalists, young journalists with a different mindset. And so they installed this traineeship that still is given every year in their newsroom. So, and then a newspaper.
You also did one of these traineeships?
Yes, I also did this traineeship. And then you are taught to really have, if you are reporting story, to have all the time the sides of the whole situation, and then you are
so trying to be objective and
trying. They have this idea of objectivity. Now we know that objectivity is a term that has been questioned, right?
Yeah.
That people are saying like, why,
you know, doesn't exist,
and if something is wrong, you shouldn't be objective. You know, it's clearly nothing good. But they want to be sort of impartial, objective. That is their philosophy. And they don't want to give a judgment. They want the audience to give the final word about that's one of the ideas they have, that they really believe that the audience is smart enough, so you don't have to really orientate them. You just give them the information from every side possible, and they just decide what is good and bad. And yes, and the journalism in practice in Reforma, another of the practices that they implemented was like journalists there, like the dress code for journalists was totally mandatory, that men would be dressing with a tie in a daily day work of life. So they would look smart. They would just stand out from the rest of the crowd of the other journalists.
So at press conferences, you would immediately see
who was from
Reforma, because nobody else wore a tie.
Yeah, many other journalists, but at least you know that that was a dress code, mandatory. And for the women, just formal kind of clothes. And also, you wouldn't be allowed to receive any present or from any of your sources. So it's also...
Which was common practice.
Which was common practice. I mean, you used to receive money, but also other sort of gifts. And now with Reforma, it was very... it was like a joke. Like, you wouldn't even accept in a press conference like a glass of water, you know, just to really keep this line between your sources.
Did you really?
I think I did.
Like, you never touched the food that was on the buffet press conference?
Never. I didn't even like that practice either, just to be in a conference and just eating. But it's a very normal thing. I don't know in the culture of other journalistic cultures, but at least in Mexico, it's very common. Like, organizations that give press conference, they would offer like a breakfast to the journalists, yeah. And everyone would eat it. No, if you are a journalist from Reforma, you wouldn't. And sometimes...
What if somebody found out that you actually did eat?
I don't know. I think also the journalists would follow the rules very proudly. So everyone was like, okay, you know, they also wanted to stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did other journalists react to this sort of new... Yeah. Style?
I think there has been a sort of perhaps jealousy, envy, quizá, maybe, of this idea, because it really makes a separation of between which media you represent. So it makes the journalists, not everyone like a journalist, you would say, like, this is from Reforma. So it's interesting, because then when we discuss about journalism, we always see them like journalists, like as a mass, like a unit. Mm-hmm. However, if you are in the Mexican context, when you see journalists, at least the ones from Reforma will always trying to find the way to separate themselves from the rest. Mm-hmm. So it was a very more individualistic work. They just work
for now. Are you company. Saying that because you work there and you're now you want to sort of present them in a very good way, or are they really the only ones that have this style of journalism from the new established newspapers?
No, I think everyone was assuming the role of doing investigative things, to really be inquiring. The only thing is that Reforma was just trying to set a difference, I don't know, among its journalists. But by that time, yeah, already by the 2000s, at least in Mexico City, the journalists that you would encounter, they were also willing to be investigating, researching. Like, this culture really spread, although there were perhaps other journalists that some people would say that wouldn't stick to this norm. But yeah, like, the idea of being a journalist really changed.
So now we talked a lot about the Mexican context or the Mexican media landscape, and also a little bit about political history. Let's talk about your research now. What exactly are you researching?
Well, because of the watchdog journalism arrived late, we could say, if we compare it with other countries, just in the beginning of the new millennium, it was a...
Sorry to interrupt you, because now I just remember the question that I wanted to ask earlier but forgot. Then we come back to the research question. How was the situation in other Latin American countries during that time? Is it similar to Mexico?
Yeah, I mean, the relationship of the media with the government is pretty similar. Perhaps the difference is that they didn't have this... control of one single political party. We have to remember that in those periods were the famous dictatorships, military dictatorships in Latin America. So there was not this, it was not this conception of watchdog journalism either, but the political context was dominated by these military governments.
Yeah, because whenever I talk to someone from Latin America, I have the feeling that they trust public media less than we do in Europe, because we think public broadcasters are actually doing high quality journalism and are very independent from the government, even though they are funded by public money. And it's completely different in Latin America. Do you agree?
Yes, totally. It was because of this relationship. Like, media was conceived more just like not a reliable institution. It was more just like, yeah, PR for the government. That is why this idea of everything that comes from the public, it's some sort of disordered, it's not trustworthy. And that is the case.
Still.
Yeah, even though the public broadcast system, at least the one that developed at the federal level to public channels, they have always offered a sort of neutral kind of information. The point is that the reach they have, it's not very broad. So even though you can have some sort of, perhaps not so much critical, but at least quality information in a way, they don't have much more popularity. Like, the reach, the highest reach of the broadcast in Mexico, in Latin America, has always been by the private companies. So it's not such, they don't play such a big role either. Yes, in the imaginary of the people, they wouldn't. Sperry has always been consumed by a very small part of the population.
Okay, thanks for this excursion. I was actually interrupting you while you were explaining what your research was.
What I do in my research is actually to investigate how the transformation and the changes in the industry are happening in a country like Mexico. We all know that similar dynamics are everywhere, like internet has just been expanding across the globe. Digital platforms have also been also taking most of the advertising money that has been expended worldwide. So there are many similar trends around the world. But what I would argue, or what I wanted to research, is what is making the situation different. Because according to one of the most prominent scholars of our times, Professor Silvio Weisbord, he argued that even though there are similar situations everywhere, not everywhere journalism is vulnerable at the same degree. And I argue, like, in countries like Mexico, journalism is much more vulnerable than in other developed countries.
Mm-hmm.
So
why?
That, yes, and this is very interesting, because we are, or the industry is also the same, challenges of misinformation and overload of find it very hard organizations to actually be recalled and reminded by the audiences in the digital platforms. Like, people are just, you know, recalling that they just read it in Facebook or in Google, right? So we are facing those same challenges, but at the same time, other challenges that are part of that come with the history of journalism in Mexico. So one of the things and challenges that are perhaps different is like the way the funding of the media, they don't have any, at the moment, they really don't have so much places where to rely from. So unlike in countries such as in the United States, for example, although there are just few examples, but also in Europe, where there are news organizations that have actually worked to be funded by the readers, either by subscriptions or either by crowdfunding, in Mexico, these models have not been very successful. And what I research, and when talking with journalists, why they are arguing that basically because this long history of relationship with the government of the media in general, people really have not so much trust in the news organizations. So now at the moment that actually...
Still, even if they're privately funded, they still don't trust...
No, because of this relationship, they always saw like the news organizations were colluded with the political power. So at this moment when they are in need and they could actually look to the readers to be funded by them, they are not having so much response. Many have not even tried to because they know it won't work. And some others who have tried to have find it very, very difficult to make that a representative in comfort in his organization. So another thing that happened is that this with the new president at the moment, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who won the elections in 2000.
Can you say that one more time slower?
Yes, Andrés Manuel López Obrador had a new policy of austerity and of having a really distance between the, he wanted to break with this practice of using the media as an instrument for the power. So all the money that was really destined to the media through advertisement, it was reduced dramatically, around in 60%. So what the conditions that are experiencing at the moment, many news organizations, and is reflected on the journalist, of course, is that they are really lacking sources of income. And they are in debt. Actually, for example, La Jornada has openly said it is one of the newspapers that has been actually more more honest with its audience. In two editorials, they have actually acknowledged the public the difficult economic situation that they are going through. And they have actually said it's difficult time. In 2017, they have to reduce the benefits of their workers, of their employees. Like they have to really reduce the salaries of the employees, I think by half. And assuming the economic situation they were going through. And the other newspapers, they have not recognized it like them openly with an editorial, but it is just reflected on the quantity of how many news journalists had been fired. According to the newspaper news journalists that I have been talking with, they are telling me that every week there is massive layoffs in the news organizations. And one is telling me that the situation is very precarious, that before journalists were always, they have never had like the best working conditions. It has not been very stable job profession, but at the moment he was addressing like this, we are just running from, you know, to see where we can fit. We are now concerned about food. What will we eat, us and the ones that were able to make a family? We have to say, like, in Mexico, many of the journalists of my generation and older ones, they really assume the profession as their own mission of life. When you were training at newspaper as Reforma, you were very much taught that you were a journalist 24 hours, almost like a doctor. Mm-hmm. So many of the journalists, they really never developed, I would say like, or they took them so much more to develop a life besides the newsroom. So at this moment, in times of precarity, yes, they are experiencing this anxiety, I would say it, about where to go. Also, there was before many journalists that would be perhaps tired of being employees of a newsroom. It was very natural for many of them to migrate to the public sector. Many of their sources from the government will they perhaps offer them a job in the public relations department. But at the moment also these positions are also totally scarce. So going to PR for government, it's no longer an option. So yes, journalists from the ones that I'm talking with, they are just finding their own way. Many have been building their own websites. But even when building their own websites or trying to be entrepreneurs, they face the challenges of not having the knowledge or expertise of how to do a business, because at the end, it's a business. Mm-hmm. Journalists were always focused on investigating the power. They were never trained to have a business plan. So now they are facing of having...
They need to do everything now.
Now they have to do anything. And they feel very weak with those tools. So, and now, even though they have been willing to become entrepreneurs, they also found themselves with a harsh reality that this idea of being able to make some income through the social platforms is not really a possibility. They have to have millions of viewers and really a big social base to actually have some good money that could actually make them a revenue to produce quality journalism, because all these journalists that we are talking about are the ones that are willing to do investigative quality journalism. And as we all know, this is a profession that takes time and takes money. And it's apparently nobody has find a way to make it sustainable.
How many journalists did you talk to during your research?
In my research, I have spoken, well, officially with 20 or perhaps 21,
from
22.
From digital news?
Digital and legacy, magazines and daily news sites. But mainly one of the requirements was that the media was written.
Written,
because this is, we all know that written, the newspapers have been the ones that have traditionally produced this quality journalism. So magazines and from different positions, I wanted to have the perspectives of the directors, how they were seeing the situation. And I had talked with cartoonists, who also have an interesting view on the things, and journalists and editors. So from all the sort of... positions from news organizations.
And if you had to summarize, what were the three biggest challenges that the journalists would talk about?
Yeah, it's funding. It's the main one. Second is...
Because the government cut the funds.
And because of the advertisers, they left for the internet. Mm-hmm. And in the internet, there is no money left for news organizations. And the other one, it's the... I think the main one, it's economic, and then a sort of other consequences come down. So this has impact, of course, in the precarization of the labor conditions of the journalists, like no jobs, no stable jobs with possibility to have a decent income any longer. And there is also the situation of the precarization of the work production, like they are telling that now the people that have been hired are just not doing any reportage in the streets any longer. They are just reusing the information that is available in the internet. And there is also the problem of trust on the audience, that the audience, it is a problem of trust and a problem of indifference. Some of the journalists would argue like, oh, journalists, like people don't trust on us, that's why we cannot charge them for the content. But also some of them, they are indifferent. They're actually don't care about journalists at all. So society has not been very had much solidarity among the among the guild of journalists. So when I'm talking to them, one of the concerns that they are having, it's also like the rise of these new figures in the internet that are just being very popular, that are just people that open their YouTube channel are just commenting the news instead of researching or producing. And people are really much more comfortable to just listening to one person that has been just commenting the news instead of actually read a chronicle of a very good piece of journalism. And they feel very left behind, not appreciated by the public. And yeah, one of the things that I found interesting is that when I have asked to them who they think is responsible for the conditions of the news sector, and I always have found that they always blame the journalistic sector itself for the conditions, because they said that because they had this history of relationship with the power, they never built a social base of trust and relationship with their readers. They also point out the lack of capacity to foresee the change. They said that they were very comfortable in the system that they were working. They didn't think that this could actually change the internet. And they also think that they are responsible because they have not really discussed as a sector, what will we do with all these changes? There have not been a collective public discussion on the state of the journalism industry. And this is very different from what has happened, for example, in the United States or even here in Germany, where news organizations are actually lobbying in the parliament to make the government to put some sort of lock to the digital platforms, for example. They have really taken action as a collectivity to protect the sector. Whereas in Mexico, the news industry has not been discussing this as a unit. Mm-hmm. So they are addressing this. And yes, we have also the critical media that also started in Mexico, that they thought that being in the digital sphere without all the expenses of a newsroom, they thought they could actually be able to make a business, and they found out that it was not possible.
I think it's so interesting because a lot of the challenges that you mentioned are also prominent here in Europe or all over the globe, I guess, that digitalization brought about and upon newsrooms that are struggling with funding and how to finance themselves while they give the news away for free online. And but of course the political and economic preconditions are very different in Mexico, and that brings it to a different outcome compared to Europe. And I think what we didn't mention is that when we talk about Mexico and journalism, we also have to talk about freedom of the press there and what it's like to be a journalist in Mexico. I looked up that the ranking of Reporters Without Borders, and Mexico ranks 144th out of 180 countries in the ranking in the Freedom of Press Index. And I think Mexico is also the country where most journalists were killed last year. And yes, we also have that. We have to keep that in mind, that it's like that is also already a challenge. When we talk about media and journalism in Mexico,
yes, that's also sure. But it's interesting because among the journalists that I have talked with, just two have mentioned it as one of the biggest challenges.
Really,
perhaps
that is interesting. Yeah.
Yes, that's interesting, right? Just two of them have actually mentioned that this is one of the biggest threats. And I think it has to do that the people that I have talked with are in Mexico City, and the reality in Mexico City and in the rest of the country is very different.
Mm.
So even though that, the threat of doing investigative reporting is also risky in the city, the real violence, anti-press, takes place in countries where there is not such much of, how would I say it? Well, all the violence related to drugs and all these gangs are taking place in outside of this city. And this is where the journalists are much more vulnerable. Yes, there have been really prominent journalists, correspondents for big papers, for example, for La Jornada, Miroslava Rich, Regina Martinez. They were killed because of the investigations they were doing. But mm-hmm. because they are in the States, they don't have this institutional kind of or social capital that protects them. So it's easier, I think.
So you think if you had spoken to journalists from rural areas, it would have been different?
Yeah, totally. They mm-hmm. have a different, I mean, the precarization of the conditions of the low paid, I think it has been normal for them always. And the biggest threat that they face is this sort of violence. While in the city, this precarization is something new. They were not used to be really not having a monthly check. Mm. That was something at least covered.
Okay, let's come to an end slowly. Maybe just one last question. What do you think has to change in order to make life better for media entrepreneurs and journalists in Mexico?
Yeah, I think the situation, it's complicated. I don't think it's really viable that journalists could actually rely on the readers, at least not for the investigative watchdog journalism that would allow them to actually be sustainable. I think, in my view, journalism should be treated as a public good, and as a public good, then it implies that it should be guaranteed by the state. I know that because of the tradition that the state was very close with the government, it really creates the idea that if journalists would receive money from the state, they will be immediately losing autonomy. Is why so many journalists oppose to it, and even the government. But in the conditions, economic conditions that we are living at the moment, where you are not going to convince private companies to fund the journalism that is clearly not in their interests, I think there should be created a way, a rule, from money coming from the state, from the citizens, such as it happens here in the countries, European countries, that there should be like a budget designated to guarantee that the profession continues to exist. Because in the way that it's being developed now, it just seems that it's going to continue shrinking, and perhaps it will start to be funded by other actors that would not have the interest of making money, because there's clearly not money in the business, but might have other perhaps political or economic interests. And then journalism could be continued to be distorted. So I think in a way it should be a mechanism that must be related to the citizens. Money.
Thank you, Vero, very much for this insight into Mexican media politics and media economics, I guess. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you on social media?
Oh, I have my Twitter account, and it's at Vero.
I can look it up for you. Thank you. Just to be sure.
Vero.
At Vero Sanchez.
Yeah.
Underscore M.
Yeah.
Vero. Yes.
And
you can follow the Bredo Institute on Twitter at Bredo Institute. And you can visit our website, leibniz-hbi.de. And you're also very welcome to leave us feedback or suggestions for the podcast under podcast@leibniz-hbi.de. Thanks very much for listening. And until next time, bye.
Bredocast. Wir erforschen was mit Medien.